Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. So you want to start a podcast, huh? Well, we got something to help you. The Black Real Estate Dialogue brings you the How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience ebook and webinar bundle.
We are controlling transmission.
Come and put info into action as we show you the step-by-step process to sharing your successful podcast on a budget. This bundle is full of the exact details, social media hacks, and podcasting process we've used to gain 13,000 downloads and over 10,000 Instagram followers. But that's not all. As a bonus, you'll receive the exact super trackers we use to stay organized and free access to our private Facebook group designed to help you execute. Make sure you click that link now because there is an audience for you to reach. The How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, the ebook and webinar bundle presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content.
Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access?
My goodness! If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience. Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 69. A couple quick announcements before we get into today's episode. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and leave a review on whichever platforms you're listening to this on. This will definitely help us move up in the rankings. It'll help us reach more people. So thank you in advance for helping us in that way. If you want to gain early access to episodes, bonus content, discounts on merch, and more, join our Patreon program. Visit patreon.com/blackrealestatedialogue to join, or visit the link in the show notes. This episode is sponsored by the Bread Real Estate Investing Community. If you're looking for a group of like-minded individuals and exclusive access to experienced real estate investors, look no further. Each month, we have 2 masterclasses taught by experienced investors in various areas of real estate, unlimited access to past guest speaker recordings, which means when you join, you automatically gain access to our library of over 10 past guest speaker recordings. And you also have access to our private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everyone in the group, to share resources, and also to support one another. This week, we'll have DeAndra McDonald speaking with the group about house hacking and how she retired through real estate at age 28. So she'll talk about house hacking and her journey to 30 doors and counting. You definitely don't want to miss out. Make sure you're there. If you would like to join the community, click the link in the show notes or go to blackrealestatedialogue.com. Without further ado, I'm so excited to get into this episode. I know you'll all love it. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. I'm very excited for this episode. Here with me, I have Marcus Williams out of Seattle, Washington. Marcus, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Awesome. So, Marcus, if you could just introduce yourself and tell the people your story, tell the people who you are and all that good stuff.
Well, I'll try to sum it up pretty quickly. When I was young, I grew up in Seattle, Washington. Had a real passion from hoop from the very beginning. I was very lucky to have a passion at a young age, probably since I was 6 years old. That carried me all the way through, kept me out of trouble, got me into college, University of Arizona. I was one of the first people in my family to go to college. And then after 2 years at Arizona playing ball in Tucson, I went on to play professionally with San Antonio Spurs, Clippers, a couple other places. And then I ended up going over to China, believe it or not, and spent 7 years out there, and I had a lot of fun. And then after I retired from ball to be spend a lot more time around my kids, I was trying to look for another passion and real estate. And I stumbled on that and I really found a love for housing. And I have my real estate license, but my main source of income and probably where my real passion lies is in multifamily investing and also helping first time home buyers, especially, minorities, accomplish their dreams of home ownership. I teach first time home buyer classes and all that. So, yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So I would love to start with just learning more about your childhood, what your childhood was like, and specifically, what did you see or maybe what didn't you see that shaped your view of building wealth?
Oh, man. Well, I think, stories like similar to, a lot of, African-American single family, single mom household, just moved around a lot. That's why I think basketball really, gravitated to me because basketball is something you can just play by yourself. And, being from Seattle, it rains a lot out here. So being able to play indoors. But then, no, there wasn't really a lot of, talking about, hey, investing in general. We were just really trying to make it. But I always, one of my biggest passions or my purposes, I always wanted to kind of get my mom in a house by the beach. That was something that always like stuck with me for whatever reason. My mom was really hardworking and, she rain, sleet or snow, she was getting in that car, driving off to work. So I always wanted to kind of put her in a great situation. So I didn't really know how I was going to do it, but I was like, well, maybe ball is going to be the way. And so I just took off with that. And I really, to be honest with you, I really didn't start really learning about finances and themselves almost until like I was done playing basketball. As sadly as that is, I think as athletes, they always tell us kind of, hey, get a financial advisor, let someone else take care of it for you. Don't want to juggle too much at one time. But, man, that's just such a myth. So I started tapping into it when I retired because, I started getting real estate. I got to understand the books, understanding, investing, cap rates, all these different numbers and economics and diversification, all these things. So I really, anytime I'm talking to anybody, I'm always kind of spewing that to them. Like, hey, tap into that because it could save you a lot of hassle and heartache, make your life a million times easier when you get older, for sure. So
there's one thing in there that I'm very curious about. That I've always wondered about. I'm a big sports fan, big basketball fan. So one thing you mentioned is that you didn't really hear about financial literacy, finances. You didn't really start to learn about it until after you retired. So the question I have is like, when you got to the NBA, were people just not talking about it? Was it like, we just get paid, we do our, like, what is that like at the NBA level or professionally in general? Like, is it not a priority at that age to show you how to manage your money?
Well, I think it might have changed a little bit. I can talk about how when I was there, but now, we got social media, you got a lot more access to information. The internet was something, but it wasn't what it is now. So, I think back then it was like more like, if you had a shoe deal or a trading card deal, that was really your only off the court income, at least that people were really openly talking about. But no, you're really just kind of told, hey, don't trick your money off on your friends, keep your money tight, get a financial advisor, let them take care of it. Cause they're going to handle it and know it better than you. It's just really not presented as something you can handle. I'm a risk taker. When I started looking at getting into investing in real estate stocks, I'm like, man, I had an iPhone back when it first came out. I would have been invested in Apple. I would have been looking at multifamily, but there's an insinuation that you're not really built for that or to multitask. But now, right, you see all these athletes doing, opening up their own business, their own media companies, doing movies, doing investing, doing their own podcast. So maybe now it's more openly talked about. But when I was playing, it definitely is not. And but it's just a tool that you're going to, because no matter what you do, right, you're gonna need to make a living. Mm-hmm. So I don't care what you're doing. You're going to need to know about the simple, fundamentals of building wealth and financial literacy. So yeah, it definitely, I wish I would have learned it a lot earlier, but I'm also really glad I learned it now with enough time to kind of spread it out to whoever I come in contact with.
Definitely. So as far as the financial advisors, what's your opinion on that? Like, do you think as a professional athlete, a lot of them don't have your best interests at heart? Like, is that was that your experience or the experience of those like around you? Like, what did you see? Because, you know, we hear about the ESPN, the E60, the broke and all this stuff. You hear all these things. But I guess, you know, since you were there and around a lot of guys, what was that like from what you could see?
Well, yeah, I think there's always going to be a little bit of everything depending on what, you know, what situation or who you're talking to. You know, I didn't have a negative experience in that way, but there definitely is those stories, right, where people get taken advantage of. But I think the common denominator with everybody is that we wouldn't know really if we were. Right. If you don't have that information, how can I check? You know, you could tell me anything. You could tell me my portfolio is doing amazing and show me a couple of numbers here. And that's one thing that kind of started making me uncomfortable was like my financial advisor would put some stuff down and be talking to me about why we're invested in this and, you know, explanation for why this performed this way. And I'm like nodding, like almost like when I signed my first mortgage papers, like, OK, like I'm looking at the stuff like, but I don't have any idea what you're talking about. And you're kind of a little bit embarrassed to ask because you don't want to ask something foolish. Yeah. So then you just kind of, the meeting's over and you're like, okay, as long as I'm not broke, then maybe things are going well, you know? So, but my financial advisor was great, but there is a funny story about that is when I was with her for probably, let's see, almost 7 years, seven to eight years. And when I was going to get into real estate, I made that decision and I was going to pull all my money out and was going to go, put it all in the streets of real estate. So I called her and I told her this is what my plan was. And she's a very mild mannered, you know, older lady. Never heard her at all, like get out of pocket or anything. Man, she was, I can't believe you. This is pompous. I can't believe you don't know what you're doing. Like you're gonna lose all your money. And I'm sitting out looking at the phone like, is this the same person that I've been working with for 7 years? Like, so I just kind of let her go off. And then at the end, I'm like, okay, you know, are you done? I said, Do you think I haven't thought about this? Like, you don't think I've done some research? Like knowing me, like as dedicated I am to my craft of basketball, I'm just going to go do something frivolous. But yeah, she really didn't really believe in what I was going to be doing. But that kind of validated me a little bit more. Like, man, I got to do this now. Now I got to fire for sure. So yeah, it was more like that. And I said, you know, I know you've done a good job. She's like, no, I know I have. And I'm like, man, this is real. I haven't talked to her since, you know, it's been, you know, I used to talk to her, you know, every quarter or two or every couple of weeks. And ever since I did that, it was definitely a split there. Split of minds. So yeah.
Wow. Did you end up taking the money out?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, she wasn't gonna stop me, you know what I mean? But I think she just, you know, because I didn't really have, and that's kind of, I got to be the rebel for my family because there's no one else who's doing what I'm doing. So yes, I don't have someone I can like lean on with real experience, but I'm also okay with dying on my own, falling on my own sword. So if I make mistakes, great, but I'm always able to kind of navigate and learn from them. And then, so I had faith, no matter if it went good or bad, at least if I was going to do it, I wouldn't look back and say, at least I took that chance rather than not doing it and be like, well, I just let someone really control my whole financial destiny. And hopefully it works out. I think that's the dangerous part, at least for me personally, how I take the control.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So what happened after that? So you put money out and it's like, all right, blank canvas. What happened after
okay.
that?
Okay. So this was actually, yeah. So this is, man. So actually I was going to buy a personal home for me. Mm-hmm. So this is like a little horror story of real estate. So I was going to buy this personal home and I was got it under contract. I'm trying to shorten this up, but long story short, I ended up putting a lot of upfront money for earnest money down and lost like 80 grand of earnest money because I was a retired ball player, right? Mm-hmm. So now, you know, I had the money, but I, you know, my source of income was China. So the bank's looking at that like it's, you know, it's blowing their mind because they're looking at all this Chinese documents. I can't read it. I'm sitting here trying to communicate with my, you know, previous employer. It's just not connecting the dots for people. So I lost a lot of money doing that. And after that, I was like, man, you know, screw it. I'm not going to buy a house for myself. I need to get something that's going to make me some money. And so then I was start thinking about flipping homes and, you know, I'm in Seattle. So our real estate market's really been hot since 08. We came out of the housing bubble. So when I started thinking about flipping homes in the city, you know, I was going with a realtor. We were looking at homes, but man, the margins were just way too tight for me to make any kind of real money that was worth the risk, you know, because the average home is like 700,000. Wow. Here. So, you know, you're not really, you know, it's just hard to get that return unless it's just completely demolished, you know, just in horrible shape. And I didn't have the experience yet for that. So I said, well, I'm not going to flip a home. What am I going to do now? You know, when me and my mother were, when I was a kid, we used to get the newspaper and go look at the classifieds and go look at the homes, highlight the open houses we want. So I always kind of like looking at houses. So I was like, well, man, maybe I could be a landlord. I don't know. You know, so let me look into a little bit. And then I ended up buying a fourplex in a little kind of suburban city outside of Seattle. And I just kind of, the numbers looked good. I kind of looked at comps for the rentals, kind of estimated the budget. You know, my uncle has a lot of contracting experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just kind of went for it, man. And that's how it started.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And there's a couple things in there that I want to talk about. So in the beginning, you mentioned this financial advisor, right? She basically been your best friend for 7 years while you were working with her. She was, you know, managing everything, right? But you took a stand. You said, you know, all right, I'm at this point in my life. I'm going in a different direction. I want to invest in real estate. And so you initially were going to buy your personal home. Unfortunately, you ended up losing about 80 grand in that deal. Yeah. But I think that was the second pivotal moment because you had two choices at that time. You could have said, all right, I'm never buying anything again. But you said, you know what? Maybe I'll put myself on the back burner. Let me see if I can become a landlord. We're still at the beginning, but I think those are two pivotal points that I want people to really think about. Because you know, had you made some different decisions, we probably wouldn't be sitting here. So I think it's powerful that you kind of stuck to your guns in terms of getting your money. You didn't give up after that first real estate venture didn't go well, and you ended up being able to get a fourplex.
Yeah, no, I actually often tell people it's the best 80 grand I ever spent. You know what I mean? Because that property was kind of expensive, and it wouldn't have generated me any money, and it wouldn't have done anything with my, you know, needing a new passion, right? I just had a place to live. So, you know, I've lived in a lot of different housing environments, so I was okay just kind of transitioning into something that, you know, maybe wasn't as comfortable just temporarily until I kind of find what I wanted. But absolutely, I think being an athlete, you know, not to go on a tangent, but I wish athletes would see some of the things, a lot of the skills that we acquire or the things that are required from you are so transferable to other things, you know, facing adversity, you know, being able to pivot, you know, quickly and make adjustments, you know, learning on the fly, you know, discipline, you know, obviously showing up, all those things, because I think sometimes being and taking risks, right? Taking that last second shot or, you know, right, making that catch in the end zone, right, at the end of the game. But I think when I deal with kind of losing money or just hard times, just kind of my belief in myself makes me able and confident to make those next decisions. It's just, I think confidence comes from your success from previous events in your life. So you just kind of lean on those. And like I said, I'm always okay. If it's in my control and I make those mistakes, I'm good. If someone else makes them and then they impact me, then it's like, man, that's always the worst.
Definitely. So what was that experience like, just, you know, buying a property for the first time, being a landlord and all that? What was that like for you?
I was nervous. I was really nervous. I think the thing I was nervous about was, you know, I want to make sure, I want to do a good job. Like I took it seriously. Like I'm going to be giving these people a place to live and I'm responsible for it. But I did like the idea of being creative because it was a value add property. And that's kind of all I really, you know, tap into. So I wanted somewhere I could be creative and renovate. Obviously for me, I don't, you know, can't do the dilapidated buildings, but if it needs some good, you know, aesthetic work on the inside, I'm definitely in for that. So, but I was most nervous about giving people their, you know, their notice to vacate because, you know, that's just, I can't imagine, you know, I've lived in, you know, transitional housing. I know what that's like. So it's not really something that feels good. And it still doesn't feel good to this day, to be honest with you. But I always try to be decent and think about other people. So I think our state, you know, you can give them like 30 days. I'll give them like 60 days, you know what I mean? Just the people have a little bit more time, you know, maybe it's not the best thing for me financially, but you know, I think just relationships are everything with people. It makes it a lot easier on you. So, but it was definitely a doozy from the beginning. Like it ended up having asbestos. So I had to get it sealed off and all that. Wow. Spent like 25 grand to get all that remediated in all four units. I ended up having to redo the roof. And that's even before I've been able to, you know, to purdy up the place. So most of the tenants were pretty easy going. Mm-hmm. I had one guy who, like, I knocked on the door, and, you know, I'm giving the notice out, and usually tenants talk. So, like, as soon as you give the first tenant, then they go tell everybody else this what's going on. So by the time I got to the last guy, he just kind of opened the door a little bit, took my paper and slammed it. And so I'm like, oh man, this is going to be bad. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, he's going to squat, right? I'm thinking the worst. But, and then so some of the other tenants moved out early. And so we started doing some work. So I was at the building kind of helping my uncle, you know, I'm not going to front. He does the majority of the work, but I was just helping with some demo, things like that. So anyway, I see the gentleman come out with his dog and say, hey, this guy looked like he had a vacuum bag had been empty. He was just so dusty. His dog was dusty. He just looked so filthy. And I'm looking like, oh, I said, he's going to squat. He's ruining my place. Anyway, he didn't, he left on the day of his last 60 days. I go in, me and my uncle go in his unit. So just, it's a townhome style fourplex. So there's a half bath, a kitchen and a living room, dining room on the first floor. You go mm-hmm. upstairs, two bedrooms and a bath and a full bath. Mm-hmm. So we go in there. It's just dust. It's so dirty. But then we go to turn the water on, kitchen sink don't work, upstairs sinks don't work, bathtub, shower doesn't work. The only run of water this gentleman had was the downstairs powder room sink.
What?
Right? Yeah. So then we go from there. So obviously now I'm going to rip out the cabinets and to get to Rick, we did a full, you know, gutting everything. And my uncle goes, now, given my uncle's a pretty tough dude, he's gotten under a lot of houses, dealt with a lot of nasty stuff. He goes under to undo the sink, the plumbing, and you hear this. And so this gentleman was alcoholic. So what we think happened is he had been drinking like red wine or something, got sick, right? Regurgitated into the sink. The sink was clogged. And so it just fermented in there, right? And so as soon as he went and like my uncle goes, and he just throws up everywhere.
Oh,
and
I my go gosh.
Running out of the building, you know, be like, just like a bomb's about to go off. Man, it smelled so bad. And we had to use this air filter thing. It was running for like a month to get all the smell out. It was a doozy, man. But we finally got it out, and I should have done it before and after, but that was, and this is my first property. So I'm like, this is going to be like this every single one. This is crazy. But we got through that, and the rents were like really low. They were like renting for like $800. And in Seattle, that's really low. And then I ended up being out running for like $1,500, $1,600. So it ended up working out, but it was a doozy for the first. But I had a lot of fun. They looked really good. And then meeting tenants, that was something else I was kind of nervous about. You know, being Black with, you know, dreads and having people come over. And you know, usually they don't even think I own the place.
Yeah.
You know, they're usually like, hey, are you the manager? And I'm like, nah, I'm the landlord and I own it. Then you kind of get these reactions a little bit sometimes. Yeah. Not always bad, but they're just not expecting. Yeah. I've had people walk right by me sometimes.
Oh, so you had a grand introduction, huh?
I did. So it actually was, that part was good though. I think if it goes perfect the first time, then you got this false sense of security.
Yep.
That it's like everything's going to happen like this. And then when you get smacked, it's like, you're not prepared. So like, I always am pretty conservative. If I estimate a budget for a reno, I'm going to give at least a 20-30% contingency that, hey, if things go bad, I got at least 30% or 20% hidden away. Hopefully it goes good, but it's never perfect, never.
Wow. So how did it feel when all the renovations, all that stuff was done and you were finally able to place tenants and kind of, you know, get into the flow of things? How did it feel once you got over that first hump?
It was life-changing. You know, it was not just from, and really honestly, not from a money-making standpoint at all. Being African-American, owning, you know, now an investment property, thinking about my kids, right? Think of it. And also that I can transition from ball. Like, I think a lot of us struggle, you know, when you have a first love like that, you know, it's hard to get that divorce. You know, I remember my last workout. I was like in tears almost, you know what I mean? Like, basketball is all I know. And so to go from that to deal with, you know, some of the hiccups and all of that and deal with the financial advisor and then have this place, have this vision of, okay, this is what it could rent for. This is what I got it at this price. This is what it's going to rent for. This is how much I'm going to cash flow and see that through, you know, without really any real experience and just a realtor I hired off the internet. and my uncle. Yeah, it was, and then I was like, well, I see why people do this. This is great. You know what I mean? I want to do it some more.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was life changing for me from not really a monetary standpoint, but just like, oh, I can do this. And then start clicking like, oh, this is what people be. This is why most people that are wealthy aren't athletes, because there's other things out here.
Definitely. So I guess also, since I know you played pro for a while, what inspired you to retire and just move to the next stage of your life?
My kids. Mm-hmm. If I was playing like Seattle, we don't have a team,
Which I think is, I think that's criminal, by the way. They need to bring the Sonics back.
An unusual punishment, man.
Yeah,
we're a ridiculous. Great sports city. And I'm no shade, but Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. That really doesn't.
So like if I was playing for the Sonics or even in the pros anywhere, not pros anywhere, but in the NBA, it would have been easier. But when I'm in China, I'm there for like 7 months and I can't, you're not just traveling back and forth to the States. So like my son's getting older. My daughter was only like one. She was just born she was born like 2 years before I retired. So, but my son is like six at that time. And, those are just, I start thinking, right? Like, I don't want to miss and not be able to interact with them. Sure, it's great to make money. But that time of just, father, son, father, daughter, I want to be present for that. Mm-hmm. And, because I was gone 7 months and then you kind of come back and it's like, oh yeah, I remember you. You know what I mean? Like that mm-hmm. didn't really feel good, So I was like, well, man. And then I had some injury in my hand. So it wasn't necessarily the injury that told, but it was just a combination of those things. I was like, man, I'm not one of those people that will like ride it till the wheels fall off or like, I'm sorry. And like, mm-hmm. it's my last game. I'm like limping off the court. Like that's not really me. I want to go off like, I'm playing well.
Yeah.
This is still feels good. But then basketball started to feel like a job and it never had felt like that before. Even real estate doesn't feel like a job to me, but basketball at that point, 6 years ago, I was just getting frustrated. Like I didn't feel like it was going the way I wanted to. And I didn't really want to remember hoop like that, mm-hmm. Cause it was, it took me out, got me out of where I was at. So I always want to have good memories. I didn't want to have any animosity to the game at all.
Definitely. No, I respect that. What made it start feeling like a job to you?
Man, well, I think, I was originally living in Houston and then we're moving back to Seattle and like some things kind of, didn't go well in China. I ended up kind of, just the business aspect of it. Right. And feeling like, oh, okay, now I got to prove myself again. And, I was nomadic as far as even an NBA kind of going from team to team. China kind of found some stability. And then in China, I had injury and then it was kind of back to the same old. Well, now I'm kind of negotiating with my agent. They're like, well, they kind of want to see you play and come out and do a tryout kind of thing. And I'm working out back at home and it's just not as much pickup ball out here, I think. I don't really know why, at least when I came back home. So I wasn't feeling like I was improving or getting the work I need. I had a trainer in Houston. Everest was there. So I was also lifting with Everest. I had everything Houston set up, like a little team came out here. I'm really a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. So like, if I'm not getting it in 6 days a week, 2 days, I'm going to get anxiety a little bit, because now I know what it takes to be a professional. And if I'm not able to tap into that and, some of the injury stuff too was frustrating. I ended up having to get some ligaments removed in my hand.
Wow.
So that was just like, it was just like really kind of, like I said, just started feeling like work. And then, talking to my agent didn't really feel good. I feel like I'm trying to, have to reprove myself, which I felt like I had already done. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, maybe this is run its course. Cause like I said, I'm just not someone who's just going to go to the wheels fall off as far as like, I'm not performing at the level I'm capable of.
Yeah,
that doesn't feel good to me. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it 100 and do it well.
Definitely. I respect that. Makes a lot of sense. And so after that first property, did you kind of just decide to work on that and just see how that goes before like moving forward? Or did you end up moving forward to like other investments?
No, I went to go look for another property soon after. I probably bought like three properties in like a year and a half or 2 year span.
Wow.
So like from there, So like the reno took me on the first one. It took me like, well, not me. So I'll say like my uncle, I'll give him all the credit in the world. So him and a couple other guys, I subcontract some things out, of course, but that took about four or five months, to do that. So then soon after that, I was kind of looking for something else and found another fourplex, and then found a six unit. And the six unit actually worked, because then eventually I was renting. So now I got these rentals and I'm like, okay, I got to figure something out here. So I ended up finding a six unit, and I actually lived in one of the units while it was the reno. It was a bigger space. So more like 6,000 square feet of space. So it took about a year or so to fully renovate that. Because that one, they were on term leases. So there was a little bit more stagnation with the rentals. So some people I bought it, they still had like 6-7 months on the lease. So I couldn't just, you know, start work. So, but yeah, I lived in one of the units, and that was really fun. It was actually a little spot on by the water. And my mom ended up moving into one of them. So I was able to accomplish my goal. She got a big old view of the water. She's right. It's really fire. So that really kind of, you know, that coming to fruition was amazing. But yeah, I really from there was like, I wanted to create something that I could give to my kids. And so that they could, you know, I always bring them by sometimes. And, you know, we lived at the one. So, you know, they were able to see kind of the renovation process and us kind of, you know, then moving out, buying a single family home and all that. So I was really, once I smelled blood, man, I was on it. And I started kind of getting into other things. So like stock market and stuff like that. So,
wow. That's very cool, man. That's very cool. So you got that one. And then like this next year and a half, you ended up just getting a couple other properties as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I did the hard money thing on one of them just to do, because it was the rents were really low. So sometimes it's hard to finance that, at least in Seattle, you know, where it's like the rents are like half of market. And now the bank looks at it and they're like, I can't really conventionally loan on this. Mm-hmm. So then I went hard money route. And that was my first time dealing with that. That's a little anxiety because you got this, at least I had like a 10% interest rate on the loan. You know, it's ticking. You only got like, I had like 18 months or a year. To like before the balloon payment, right? So I had to get it rented, lease assigned, so I could show them, hey, it's done. But once I did that too, then that was another confidence builder. Hey, I can go this route as well. And then, but because I was moving into the six unit, it was a little bit easier to run that. I had to put a little bit more money down on that one. But yeah, I definitely was after it because I saw the potential. And Seattle, our city, you know, the economy here, you know, it's booming, right? Yeah. We got some of the biggest, you know, companies in the world out here, right? So Amazon, you know, Microsoft, you know, Blue Origin, Salesforce. I could name drop a lot, but, you know, there's just a lot going on out here. So I knew most likely prices are only going to go up. So if I wait, it's not really going to be advantageous for me. Yeah. So that's why I might as well get on it now. And I also wanted to create enough cash flow where I didn't have to work. So that's kind of what my goal was. So once I did that, now I can kind of do what I want. And so then the realtor who was working with me, she was like, you know, you're really good at this and identifying property. She's like, why don't you just get your license? So I was like, at first I was like, oh man, I don't know about that. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it because I can. First, I'm thinking to save me some money on the transactions. That's the first thing that I'm thinking. But then when I got my license, they're like, well, I got to find a brokerage. And so I'm like, okay. So I ended up going to a brokerage. I work at Windermere, same brokerage that the woman I was working with, Heather O'Malley, she was amazing. So she always had my back. So I went with her, the same office that she's at. And then I was like, well, what am I going to do? What's my purpose here? And so I was like, man, you know, I was one of the first time homeowners in my family. You know, I know it'd be nice for a lot of, you know, Black folks to see someone that looks like them, you know, talking to them and helping them buy a house, especially in the city of Seattle. I'm just going to do that. I'm a target first time home buyers. It'd be a harder route, but I don't need the income like that. Mm-hmm. So I could really grind it with people, you know, be with someone for a year, year and a half, helping them get their credit. So that's why the cash flow thing was so important for me. Cause like, if I can get that now, I don't have any pressure to do anything.
Wow. I want to spend some time on that. I really like that. You mentioned that you were in the real estate and you kind of, you know, you got that first four unit and you ended up getting several other multifamily properties in the Seattle area. But having that cash flow, that was enough so you could just do what you need to do. It puts you in a position where you could pursue your passion. You could pursue something that will impact people. And if you get paid in the process at some point, great. But I can tell that you just wanted to help more people become first time home buyers. And you weren't really too worried about the money because you were good already.
For sure. I think that's something that we don't always consider that when we think about, you know, one another, is that, you know, if someone's trying to survive, it's hard to start thinking about helping other people, right? You're sitting there, you're living hand to mouth. Like, I got to pay my rent. I got to do this. You know, that's what a lot of people in our community, they struggle with that because, you know, sometimes things just aren't fair out here. So it's like you just don't have those opportunities. So, you know, yeah, for me, that was I wanted to really be able to take advantage of my platform and be like, okay, I've been able to have a little bit of a nest egg, you know, from playing ball. What am I going to do with that? And how I always look at money or wealth is the freedom of my time. So be able to do that and say, well, I'm going to put some work in to really figure out the best way to help people because that's what's going to make me feel good at the end of the day. It doesn't really feel good when you've done all this and then now you're kind of just alone on this island, right? You want to see other people win. That's like one of the funnest things for me is like, give it somebody. Like I've helped people that have been previous homeowners. I've done that for sure. It's not like I say no, but handing somebody the keys, their first house, or they're one of the first people. I mean, they turn up. You know what I mean? They're smiling, they're grinning, you know what I mean? They're jumping up and down sometimes. Sometimes you might see a little tear come out. You know, they're hugging their family, their husband or their partner or whatever, their kids. That to me just feels really good. You know what I mean? So that for me is really feeling and just keeps me really motivated and also lets me know how lucky I am to kind of be doing what I'm doing and kind of get the experience I have. So for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. So talk to us more about that. How long have you been, how long have you had your license?
3 years.
Got you. Just talk to us about it. Like what's it been like just helping first time homebuyers? What's that been like for you? And I guess starting off, you know, learning a new skill, of course, learning how to sell real estate. What was it like getting on the other side of the table? Buy real estate or help people buy real estate. What was it like being on that side?
Well, it was a little bit different. Now, I guess I'll walk a little bit back because I remember getting my license and I remember talking to my dad and he called me and he was like, you know, I told him, he said, man, what you been up to? And I said, hey, I just got my real estate license. He's like, oh, okay. You know, congratulations. You about to cut your hair? And at first I was like, man, what does he mean? Then I was like, oh man. So then, cause I've been being a professional athlete, you know, black folks are the majority.
Yeah.
And so that's, I had never thought about it. And I'm like, man, like, am I going to cut my dreads? I mean, if we're on podcast, people can't see, I got long dreadlocks. So I'm like, am I going to cut my hair? Because so I start having all these thoughts. Like in mid conversation, I was just silent on the phone. And I was like, no, I said, cause if someone don't want to work with me because of how I look, then I really don't want to work with them. Right. So I was like, I'm just going to go for it. So I was, you know, when he said that, it definitely like, not that he was saying it malicious, but he was speaking truth. Cause we think about those things, you know what I mean? A lot. Right. So, but going, you know, from there, I was like, okay, well now I'm in a room, you know, I'm, you know, only black person in my office is completely different. So that was a little bit, a big adjustment for me. But at the same time, I was like, man, I want to really kill it. So, because, you know, there's going to be more people to come behind me. Right. And so I really want to set a tone. And then from going from buying real estate to helping people buy real estate, the biggest difference is for me, it was just a mathematical equation because I'm evaluating a property on numbers. People who are buying a house for emotion, for family, for themselves, there's such an emotional connection to that, right? And so you're not really just giving them numbers and mm-hmm. and telling them the average comparable and what this sold for. And our market here in Seattle is crazy. So you get homes with like 20 offers. It's really hot. It's nuts. So I just had a client, we put an offer. We didn't get it, unfortunately, but the house got 36 offers on 100,000 over ask. Yeah. In like a small suburb, like not even in Seattle. Wow. So walking people through some of those disappointments, really grinding it out with them, right? Helping them get their credit. That's something that for me, I really had to educate myself quickly. And that's really what started making me, I want to, you know, be a facilitator of information. Here's some ways to fix your credit score. Here's some resources. So I really just want to be, I looked at myself as trying to be a tool for people to be able to tap into. So, but it was, it's been really fun. It's been really, really fulfilling. But it definitely, you could read all the books you want about being a realtor. It's a lot different than what you get in the field and you have someone ask you, why should we work with you? And yeah, you're like, oh, well, hold up. Let me tell you, you know what I mean? Now you got to think of something, right? And now I don't look at it like I'm a salesman. I tell people like, if I got to convince you to buy an asset that's going to help you create generational wealth, then you don't need to be buying a house, right? I'm not selling you a car, right? Like if your car, like I got to tighten you up a little bit, right? This is going to be mm-hmm. worth a third once you drive off the lot. Like, you know what I mean? I'm going to be making all this money on the back, you know, the dealer, there's, you know, you got all these things. I got to tell you about all the bells and whistles that it got. Nah, house, you're going to live in here. Like, this is going to be somewhere you're going to spend time with your family. Like, this is going to be an asset for you. So yeah, I never feel like I'm selling anybody something. I'm just helping them evaluate a home or the homes or the market and just relaying that information, because I work with first time home buyers so that they can feel as confident submitting that offer or signing those loan docs. Cause like, you know, I just had a client who's like, man, you know, I'm writing her offer I'm like, well, you know, how much, you know how much you're putting for earnest money, all these things. And she started to kind of, and I'm like, okay, you don't feel comfortable. Let's stop. Why don't you give your loan officer a call and let's ask her these specific questions so that you can know, because I don't want you, let's not do nothing without you having 100% understanding of where your money's going, how much and why. Because when I signed my first, when I bought my first house in Houston, Texas, man, I don't even think I knew my interest rate. I didn't. No, I don't even think I didn't. I didn't. I just was wanting the keys so bad. You know, I'm not even trying. I don't know what's going on. No one walked me through the process. Mm-hmm. I didn't get burned, luckily, but I sure could have. So I don't want people to feel like that at all. I want, you know, we're in the trust business.
Definitely. That's powerful. That's powerful. So what does the future look like real estate wise? What do you want to get into, I guess, on the investing side and also as an agent? What are your thoughts on what you want to do going forward?
Well, I'm going to keep doing these first time home buyer classes I'm going to stay targeting first time home buyers. I think for me, I'm really looking forward to developing. Mm-hmm. I want to, buy, either tear down some of the properties that I own at some point, or find development opportunities to get into, taking advantage of upzoning, having some bigger projects, I'm really inspired by Paul Allen, who's from out here. Obviously he passed away last year, but he's done some really great things as far as creating multi-use and affordable housing opportunities, like in some of the old neighborhoods in Seattle. And I just really like that he kind of has these smaller opportunities for small businesses to set up below with, mm-hmm. With affordable, and they got views. It's nice. They're not like no cheap city. I mean, it's Paul Allen. He's doing it big. So, I'm really inspired by that. So I could definitely see myself getting into that, because that creativity and also providing that opportunity for people is something that, I just get excited just even thinking about it. I'm like, man, I can just imagine walking by a place and it's like this big skyscraper and it's got all these businesses down there, and I wouldn't say nothing to nobody. I just walk by and be like, I did that. I just go get a coffee in the local spot and wouldn't say nothing, and just be cool.
Definitely. That's awesome, man. Another question. You mentioned, I think you said you were in China for about 7 years playing ball.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Culturally, obviously, you're Black, you go to China. culturally, and I guess I'll start there. What was it like culturally? What was that transition like, and that experience like?
That was another situation where I was like, man, I remember signing, you know what? Actually, my buddy Everest, who introduced us, he was out there. He was in Japan first, and he actually touched base with me. I'm playing ball. He's like, hey, I got this great opportunity for you. He said China, and I was kind of going back and forth in the NBA, and I was tired of that. I wanted some security. So I'm like, I'm going to go to China. So I signed this contract, and then I'm like, whoa, I'm going to China. Like, what is this going to be like? Because I called a couple of my buddies who play overseas, and they're in Europe, though. So they're like, man, we don't know. You know what I mean? They're like, Europe is a little bit more conducive to America. You're going to find more people to speak English. The food's going to be a little bit more familiar. So now I'm like, oh man, what have I done? So I get out there, and it was because I had never traveled overseas. Like I did when I was like 2, but I don't remember that. So that was my first time overseas. And I remember just walking around. I don't understand what anybody's saying. None of my teammates, the coaches don't speak English, right? They just have. So the culture shock for me was major. But my first year, I was really focused on being like the American. Like, I wanted American food. I wanted to be around other Westerners. I wanted to, and I got really sick out there one time. I ate something. I had a bad virus for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
Like, I remember going into a hospital. They put me in I was getting IVs like every day, and I ended up, I was in the hospital. I'm getting an IV, and the gentleman next to me, he's in China. It's so many people. So the hospitals are packed. So there might be a room where just everyone's getting IVs, and like, we don't know what each other got. So it's a little, it's just a lot of people, billions of people. So, but anyway, the gentleman, he just started convulsing and he died. Like right next to me. And I remember looking over, and I look at my translator. I'm like, hey man, am I about to die? I said, cause I got some family I got to talk to. Is this the room where they take people where that happens? I said, I got some people, but I got kids, man. You got at least let me call my folks, man. Let them know stuff might get rough. But I ended up being okay. But my first year, it was just kind of, I wasn't embracing the culture. And so my first year, it was really hard. It was challenging. But then I was like, okay, the money was pretty good. I had fun. They love basketball. Basketball is the number one sport out there. The games were packed. You know, I had a good teammates. They were great guys. You know, we couldn't understand each other, but there is that, you find out that we're human.
Yeah.
You know, we all kind of, you know, there's that body language, that tone that people can, you know, you can relate, and our translator would help. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go back. But this time, the first time I brought like all these clothes, all this stuff, man, all this stuff was completely unnecessary. All I really need is some sweats, basketball gear, and that's it. Like, I didn't need nothing else. So, but I went back. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start hanging out with some of my teammates. I'm going to eat Chinese food. I'm going to be driving around on little taxis, on the trains. I'm going to travel a little bit. I'm going to really have some fun out here. And ever since then, it made my life so much easier. I had a really good time. I met some really good people out there. And then culturally, there were some things I really, really enjoyed that I wish we kind of did out here, to be honest with you. So I had a lot of fun.
That's awesome. What's real Chinese food like?
It's not P.F. Chang's, man. Man, I remember it was my translator. He said, he asked me, when I first get there, he's like, so what kind of Chinese food do you like? And I said, my favorite, I said, man, I like Mongolian beef. He looks at me, he's like, man, Mongolia is not even in China. You know? But Chinese food it kind of reminds me of the States, as far as it depends on where you're at.
Mm.
So like North China, South China, Beijing, they all have, some of them have just, now there's some similarities, of course, but they kind of have their own unique cuisine, right? So Southern China, like Sichuan, is going to have really spicy, kind of like the sweet, spicy taste. Northern China is going to be more like hearty, kind of, you know, like, you know, meat and rice and, you know, more hearty food. But I really liked soup noodles. I really kind of love for that, like beef noodles. I would have them at the airport. I would eat them. I mean, it's kind of like a fast food, but I really like it. And then I used to make these whole, and food's a little bit cheaper out there. So you could go to like a restaurant, get a whole fish, and you pick it out. It'd be in the fish tank, and you'd be like, I want that one. And then they grab them, right? He's flopping around, and then they whip it up, and you'd be sitting down at your table, and then they bring you in this hot, almost like a baking sheet or baking pan, and it'd be all these peppers and spices, and it would just be the whole fish. And then you would just take your chopsticks and you just eat it right off the bone.
Wow.
Man, so good though, man. You know, only like $15, you know.
Wow.
So that, yeah, it was great. So like something here out here would be like $45-$50. So
yeah.
I that, and you know, some of the dumplings were really good. Beijing duck. I even tried turtle. So wow. I really was like, man, I'm gonna try everything. You know, there's some things though. I was like, no. Like, one time, there's some Jello looked like Jello cubes. And I was like, oh, okay, like what's? I said, and actually, my other teammate, American teammate, was like, yeah, let me get some of that Jello. And I said, wait. I told my translator, I said, what is that? And he's like, oh, it's duck's blood. And I said, duck blood. I said, come on, man. I said, why y'all got to eat every, you know, every part of the animal? But for them, that's the culture, because a lot of people out there are really poor.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to use every part of the animal. And they also believe that every part of the animal, any part of the animal that you eat, that part of you becomes stronger.
Got right? it, okay.
So they really don't like discriminate with the food. So, but for me, there's just certain things I'm like, nah, I'm not trying to get sick, man. Just the thought of it, you know, the texture. But I had a lot of fun. I definitely kind of let my hair down out there for sure.
That's good. What part of China were you in?
I was in a lot of different parts. So,
okay.
Yeah. So at first, my first city was it was kind of in central China, like not too far from Shanghai. It's called Hangzhou. It's probably like the third or probably one of the top, I don't want to say exact number, but top seven biggest cities out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like, I don't know, 15 million people. That's what's crazy is it's like, you know, bigger than New York.
Yeah.
But it's a really nice city. It's got like a big old lake and they got a bunch of shops around there. And then I went from there to Shanxi, which is closer to Beijing. So it's kind of cold over there. It's a little bit smaller town, mm-hmm. about 8 million. I spent majority 3 years there, actually. So I was in Hangzhou, or the city called Hangzhou and Yiwu. They're like right next door to each other. I was there for 2 years, went to Shanxi for 3 years. And then I went from there to, I think it's Chongqing, which is, I went to Jilin as well, mm-hmm. which is far north.
Yeah.
So cold. You can walk across the river.
Wow.
Like people walk across the river with like cattle, like that,
wow.
that cold. Like, yeah. So a big old river too. So that was like just big old coats and everything. I mean, it was snow was, yeah, that was brutal. But So yeah, I was in four different spots, but then I did a little bit of traveling too. So I would go, I went to like Indonesia, like during the Chinese New Year, you get about a week or two off. So I would go to, I went to Indonesia, I go to Hong Kong. Yeah, I just kind of traveled around. Oh, I went to Seoul, Korea. Yeah, I just kind of got around, man, to see a little bit. If I'm going to take that 20 hour flight to get out there, I'm going to take a couple stops because I don't know if I'm going to go back after I'm done playing.
Yeah, you might as well. That's awesome. It sounds like it's a really, really cool experience. Man, this has been a crazy interview and something I'm thinking about. Like, so we spoke about, you know, just growing up, you know, having an opportunity to play basketball, go to University of Arizona, play in the NBA, play overseas, come back to Seattle and start your new life, you know, investing in real estate, getting your license, helping first time home buyers. And you've been all over the country. You spent a significant period of time in China. So as you think about all of that, could you have imagined that your life will be like it is now, or you have had all these experiences when you started, like as a kid?
Man, absolutely not. Right. It was just me and that ball, man. And I didn't really have, I think the thing I'm most grateful for is like, I didn't necessarily have, don't have result based expectations. Right. I just kind of go into things where if I love it, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it, you know, whether I'm making $1 million, I'm going to make, you know, or I lose 80,000, like the story before, right? Or, you know, if the house got asbestos, don't matter. So I definitely, the one thing I will say that I feel very fortunate as well is that basketball gave me an opportunity to see a world outside of where I was at. You know, even just playing AAU basketball, right? Going to like even just Reno, a trip like that for a kid like me was like, wow, there's other parts of the US. I'm seeing other basketball players from New York, from where you're from. And then they're supposed to be the Mecca, right? They're supposed to be the real ballers. I'm from little Seattle. And I'm like, I'm trying to show them up, right? So like this is knowing, okay, I'm touching, you know, I know some of these kids now. I'm going to camps in Georgia, you know, going to school in Arizona, traveling, man, was a big impact on me just to know what's possible, what else is out there in the world. I would have never thought that China was going to be such a kind of a fulfilling experience for me. But I'm just really glad that I took some risks because I always kind of look at it like I kind of deduce things like, if I don't do it, will I regret it? And if the answer is yes, then I'm going to go for it, right? Because I don't want to get older and be like, man, the thing I'm most fearful of is regret. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the one thing. Like, I don't want to be older, 60, 70 years old. You know, I think if you ever get a chance, you talk to older people and you hear the things that they talk about, it's never about how much money they made. It's never about, you know, the promotion. It's always about things they wish they would have been around, had a relationship with their kids. They wish they would have taken more chances. They wish they would have done that. I don't want to be doing that. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know how this is going to sound, but I would rather, you know, die with $5 in my pocket, having tried everything I can to make some myself and leave some for my family, than to die with a couple extra dollars and just stay safe my whole life and not take any risks. Because I've been able to learn a lot, make a lot of mistakes, but then I can explain those or talk about some of those things, whether it's on your podcast or to my kids or to people around, and they can be, okay, he's actually done that. The stories they're official, they're organic. And he's just being real about it because he's lived it. So that's kind of how I look at it. I never would have thought I would have traveled like I did, but now I'm in a space where I'll take all type of risks or I'll go anywhere. Let's do it.
Definitely. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah, man, this has been a powerful interview. I'm excited to put this episode out. I think your story is incredible and more people need to hear it. So, you know, I'm definitely appreciative of you coming on the show. And, you know, do you have any last words of wisdom or advice that you would offer to any of the listeners?
Oh, man. I mean, I think the only thing I would say is do what you love. Cause I don't do things just for the result, for the money. Like, people ask me a lot, like, you know, should I invest in real estate? You know, is this the way to make money? And I said, only if you like it. Like, if you don't like real estate, if you're not inspired by renovating, and then it's going to be a drag when you get the call at, you know, 10 o'clock at night and there's a leak in the roof and you got to answer your tenant and go figure out how to do it. That's going to be a drag. But if you really care about it and you love it, I don't care if you're owning a cookie factory, if you're going to be a basketball player or just a stay-at-home mom or dad, you know, doing what you love is what's going to make you feel good. And that's where you're going to be the most successful. And don't let nobody convince you otherwise. I think that's what I would say. And also for our community, it's like, you know, we live in a world where we obviously got the internet. There's a lot of a lot of resources out here. But at the same time, I also know it can be scary kind of taking those chances, especially when might not have the same flexibility. But man, kind of grinding it out, even if you're starting small, man, don't, you know, that's where it all starts. No one just starts and gets it all at one time. Just kind of pace yourself, but also set really big goals. What's that saying? Like your goals, if your dreams don't scare you, they ain't big enough.
Yeah.
Right. So just go with that and just know it's possible, but take some risks because you'll be okay. And once you realize you're okay, then you'll be able to kind of rinse and repeat and you'll gain more and more confidence. And then you'll just start to impact people around you. They'll start noticing like, man, they just got a new step. They doing good. Something up with them. Let me check in what they got going on. And like, you know, it's like that.
Definitely. Definitely. Awesome. I appreciate you coming on the show. Definitely, definitely appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. No, I appreciate you. I like what you're doing, man. Definitely like you know, the whole brand. That really resonates with me, you know. So I was like, yeah, I'm definitely gonna check in with this. Keep it up. I like the content. You know, even though people probably be watching, even though they don't say nothing, you probably don't even know how many people that you feeding information to. Sometimes, you know, people might not like it or put a like, I mean, like it. Mm-hmm. Or comment, but they see you for sure.
I appreciate that. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you'd like to support us as an official patron, go to patreon.com/blackrealestatedialogue. If you'd like to tap into the podcast or any other resources we have, you can find everything at blackrealestatedialogue.com. Thank you so much. I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time.